Okay, we welcome everyone to the fifth shiur in the Chasimus HaShas. I want to wish everybody a after Sukkot, a guten winter, a good winter for those of the vernacular. I would like to begin actually with questions that came in to Rabbi Sedley. I want to encourage the listeners to send in your questions. Of course, we will edit them if need be, but in any case, we welcome all questions. These are questions from Ben Milch. Benjamin Milch, how are you doing, Ben? I'm very happy that you're enjoying the shiurim. Question number one: according to Rav Tribitz's understanding of Rav Shura Goyen's letter, what is the role of the Goyenim? Meaning, the Tanayim compromised the Mishnah, Braises, etc. The Amorayim compromised the halachic statements of the Gemara. The Rabbanan Sabarayim make dialectics. And the Rishonim poiskim. I didn't speak about Rishonim, but right. More or less right. I mean, to a certain extent, they also interpret the Gemara too. However, where does this leave the Goyen? That's a good question. The Goyen basically is a black hole in Jewish history. Professor Zussman, we don't really know what the Goyen... I mean, there are writings of Goyenim. We have some tumors from the Goyenim. But exactly where the Goyenim fit into this picture... is not entirely clear. There will be an upcoming series on the Tekufa of the Goyim, and we can actually go deeper into the Goyim. Okay, so Binyamin, your question is a good question. Quite frankly, I have not worked the Goyim out into everything. All I know is that it's clear that there are a number of Rishonim, the Rosh. Out of Sanhedrin, Daflam and Gimel, and certainly the Rambam held that, in fact, that the Rishonim could argue on the Goyim as long as they bring proof of the Shas. But exactly where the Goyim fit into this thing is not exactly clear. There isn't so much literature from the Goyim, and not only that, too, we don't know that much about the historical period that we could, and then write about the historical period so much that we can actually make come to conclusions. Second question is, how can we make sure Goyim's going shtim, right? With the many Rishonim, among them the Rambam and the Tosfos, who argue on him. Well, it's not clear to me how many Rishonim argue on the Rishonim going. Even though the Rabbeinu Tam did argue the Rashbam and Bezim and Beis, we saw that the Tosfos and Testament Beis actually, in fact, took a opinion that was similar to that of the Rashbam. The only question is the Rambam. The Rambam, in fact, does not mention the Rabbanan Sabarai. The Losh of the Rambam is cryptic. In this Hadoma, he speaks about the Shas that was redacted by Rav Ashi, but then after that he says the redaction was completed during the time of his son. So Rambam does leave a little bit of opening. The Rambam, however, does not mention the Rabbanan Sabarai. I don't know exactly what to make of the Rambam. A wild Svara I will throw out. I'm not taking the responsibility achrayus for this Svara. But I'll throw it out anyway. Kiyadua, number of the Mefarshi HaRambam, including actually a Mari Korkus in Bikurim, which we're going to speak about, if not in this Shia, the next Shia, many Mefarshi HaRambam have pointed out that the Rambam seems to many times to paskin and seemingly, quote-unquote, ignoring the Shakal Vitalia of the Gemara. In fact, actually, the Rambam says explicitly in his Hagdama to the Mishnah Torah that the halacha is going to come from the Gemara, the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Bavli, the Tosefta, and from other works. In other words, the Rambam certainly did not see the Masa Matna of the Gemara as carrying, greater authority than the Tosefta, Yerushalmi. So it could possibly be that, in other words, once I'm not saying this with great precaution, because I'm not exactly, it's not clear really what I'm saying or what the implications are, and I'm not taking a chayis as I just explained before, but nonetheless, it could possibly be that the Rambam understood that the greater authority would have been on the Hera, up to and including Rav Ashi, and the Masamata to take place afterwards, even though that certainly is of important authority, nonetheless, that Masa Matan does not necessarily wield greater authority than Tosefta and other and Rosham and other sources. So So perhaps that's what the Ram, that's the reason why the Ram missed the Banos HaBarai. But like I said before, there is another statement, the Abdama, that says that the Shas was completed during the time of the son of Rav Ashi. That could be a reference to the Banos HaBarai. It's very important to note that if we actually look carefully at Rav Shira Goin in his letter, the amount of time from Rav Ashi to when Rav Shira Goin mentions Rav Yossi, who completed the Talmud, is not much more than 50 years. In other words, this tekufa, this period that we're speaking about, is 50, 60 years. That's all it is. Just, you know, count the numbers in the Shira Goin Sefer. There isn't a large, as some scholars want to claim, we will deal with those scholars in later lectures, want to claim that there's an incredible gulf between Rav Ashi and people who are being called Stamoyim, and that the Stamoyim have basically forgotten the entire, you know, the time of before that. That's totally inaccurate according to Rav Shira Goin Sefer. Goin Igeres clearly places the Rabbanus Sabarai, who are Savrei Unparshi, in other words, they create reasons and interpretations, as being merely 50 years after the time of Rav Ashi. So it could possibly be that when the Rambam says the Talmud was finished during the time of his son, he's not off by that many, many years. Okay? Okay, that's your second question. The third question is, why is so few of the Rabbanus HaBarai known by name? It seems odd that this group would be largely unknown. Well, first of all, the Rav Shira Goin does mention the names of some of these Rabbanus HaBarai. I forgot my Rav Shira Goin with me, but actually, I think I, in my notes, I actually translated it into English. And there, Rav Shira Goin does say does give the names of Sabarai, Rav Chuma, Rava, Rav Yossi. In other words, Rav Shira Goin does list some of the names of Rabbanus HaBarai. Now, there aren't that many, but once again, we're not speaking about a long period. In other words, a period of 50 years might only contain several names. The second thing is, I think, is the important thing is, why are they so anonymous? There's a good reason for being anonymous. In Hayrah, I'm stating a halachic conclusion. So therefore, I have to fix my name to it. But in the dialectic, which Rav Shira Goin calls what? Kolev l'hayrah, I'm not stating a black and white halachic conclusion. Therefore, it could possibly be that affixing my name is not quite so important. In other words, if I'm stating a specific legal decision, my name has to be fixed to it. But if there's a shakl of Italia, which may or may not lead to a certain halachic conclusion, depends on the Rishonim are going to learn the shakl of Italia eventually. So therefore, there might be less of a reason to fixing my name. That's the Sorokin thing. Your fourth question about Rishonim, etc., etc. I didn't understand your fourth question, Binyamin. If you could maybe email, maybe the computer wasn't working well, but maybe if you could email your fourth question again, then I would appreciate it. I don't want to spend the time being mefalpel in your fourth question. I mean, you are the Rashba, at least not yet. So, okay, now, your fifth question, when and how can I remember Rav Chibetz's Koilo? We'll discuss payments later. Okay, fine. Okay, Baruch Hashem, I also want to encourage anyone who has any questions, please, it's very, very important that there be a Masa Matan and that we actually encourage discussion and scholarly interface and scholarly exchange, and all of your questions are very, very much appreciated. You can email to admin@ hashkafacircle.com. Okay, that's the administration. I've just informed by the administration that's the place to email it to, and your questions, and if they're good questions. If they're too good, of course we won't, but if they're medium questions that are decent that I can answer, then we will certainly include them in the share. Okay, fine, very good. Now, what I want to start with today is, up till now we've established that the generations from Rav Ashi and afterwards created a give and take. And we've seen, like, examples of that. I want to go deeper into this. And the best way of going deeper into this is to take a more involved sugya. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to meet the Shem, I'm going to embark on a more involved sugya and show exactly what, you know, how practice was done. Now, of course, my shita all along has been to learn from the Rishayim. I'm not going to say anything that's on the Rishayim. Baruch Hashem. And we're going to actually, but we should, you know, say a little bit here and there, and we have to sort of like extrapolate what they say, but we're going to, you know, try to keep the sugya within the parameters of the Rishayim, Asher, Mipiyim, Mimeyim, Anu Shaisim, V'chayim. Now, there are many examples in Shas. In fact, I could be giving this internet shiur for the next 30, 40 years. But I picked the sugya because I have, because we just passed the Sukkos. And since I paskel many abaminim before Sukkos, I learned through the sugyas be'il. And I wanted to pick actually a sukkah that has to do with that, with Esreik. It's in Daf Lamed Hey in Sukkah. Those of you who have been asking Gemara, it's folio 35, side A. And I want to actually show, there's actually an interesting sugya. It's actually a little of a guzzle. So actually, it's like a still yeshivish sugya too. Yeshivish will get the Daf Lamed Aleph, but you know, maybe if you, you know, if you spend it, you learn the sugya several times, you might get the Daf Lamed Hey. Certainly Bikiyas, you know, sugya comes. I want to go through a sugya, and I want to actually show a little bit. This sugya is very, very interesting. Because not only will it give us show us an example of how the Gemara works, but actually it will give us insight into why the Gemara worked the way it worked. What was the Gemara doing? What were these redactors doing in the Gemara? What were they doing? What was the purpose of it? Okay? Now, there's a Mishnah in Sukkah on Daf Lamadal Mabez, and the Mishnah says, Vavin Esroik, which is Orla, right? We all know Orla is the fruit for the first 3 years of a tree, are forbidden to be eaten. So you can't take, you cannot take, in other words, you cannot take an Esroik, which is of Orla. Okay? You take an Esroik, which is Orla. So the Gemara asks, my time, what's the reason? And the Gemara brings a machloik is between Rab Chiya Ba'avin and Rab Yaasi. Now we're going to discuss a little bit who this Rab Chiya Ba'avin is. There's actually going to be a possible change of gilsa, and we're going to speak in depth about this at a later point. But let's, at the point right at the in the violin, in the meantime, we'll assume it's Rab Chiya Ba'avin and Rab Yaasi. Now, who's Rab Chiya Ba'avin and Rab Yaasi? So the word says, "Machlokes uchim and as mavasi." Chadamar one says, "Why can you not use an esrei avola? The fish ain't by heter achila. It's no heter achila. You can't eat an esrei that you can't eat. You can't take for the abaminim. The chadamar the fish ain't by did mamai. The other opinion, the other mandamar here, either uchim by avin or avasi, says the reason is because it's not worth anything. Is that called your money?" Might be worth something, but it's not your money. Okay? It's like a stock, you know, a few days, weeks ago. Now, and the Gemara goes on through a whole sack of Italia, give and take. We'll go into detail in the second time. The Gemara goes through a whole different give and take. At the end, the Gemara says that everybody agrees that Ezra has to be eaten. And the Machleka says the dispute between Rav Chiya Ba'avin and Rav Yaasi is basically, does the esrog have to be your money too? And what is a nafka mean? What's the practical difference? What is the practical consequence of this? The question is, would be if a person is using an esrog of Maisa Sheini in Yerushalayim, of course, the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir says the Maisa Sheini in Yerushalayim is Mamon Gavoa. In other words, the capital belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therefore, I can't use an esrog of Maisa Sheini in Yerushalayim according to Rabbi Meir. That would be the practical differences between whoever takes which opinion of Rav Chiya Ba'avin and Rav Yaasi. Okay, so in other words, the Gemara goes through several stages. First, the Gemara says there's a dispute why an esrog of Orla is forbidden, and the Gemara brings two Amoraim. We don't know, quote unquote, we don't know who said who stated which opinion, who took which position. But in any case, right, one says the esrog of Orla is cannot be taken because it's asa b'achila. The other one says because it doesn't have a din mamai. And then the Gemara somehow evolves the dispute and says, no, everybody agrees that an esroik has to be eaten. Everybody agrees that the prohibition of eating an esroik, the fruit of an esroik, disqualifies it from taking for the abominin. But rather, the dispute is, do we need a din mama? Does an esroik have to have a monetary, does an esroik have to be my capital? And that dispute will be relevant in the case of Maaseh Sheni called Ramei and Yerushalayim. There's a dispute between Ramei and Chachamim throughout Shatz, whether Maaseh Sheni, right, is called Mamon Gavoah, belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu, or whether it belongs to me. Okay? That's what the Gemara says. Okay, now, the Gemara goes after that a little bit further. The sugya is quite extended. Now, Tosfos raises a question. What's the question? The question is, why do I need any of these reasons? Says Tosfos. Tosfos says, this is a din, the law is, that oil has to be burnt. There's a din of burning oil. Tosfos even the Eraisa. Tosfos brings a proof from elsewhere in Shas, the famous in Tabula, Lamed Gimel, the famous Lamed Gimel Tamura, that, you know, is quoted quite often by other Rishonim, certainly even in Sokka, that the din, an Esrog Orla has to be burnt. If Orla has to be burnt, then based on the Esrog cannot have a Shia, cannot have a size. Michtas Shia, just like a Lulav, Shabashela, right? Or, in other words, a Lulav Shabashela has a din of Sereifa, has to be burnt, and therefore it doesn't have a Shia, right? Shaifa, Viyani, Dachas, going through all the. So it gives anything which has a din that has to be burnt can certainly, cannot, does not qualify to have a shia, an amount. A sheif has to have a certain amount, a lulav has a certain amount, and an esrog too has a certain size. Okay? So in other words, says Tosfos, why bother, in other words, why does machlokes, I mean, the din, the law, that burning, basically, in theory, principle, halachically, reduces the size, right? Disqualify something is universal. No one argues on that. So why are Rav Asi, Rav Chiba Avin introducing extraneous reasons? So Tosfos gives an incredible answer. Incredible answer. And you would have not noticed this answer had you not heard these first Shi'urim and Chasimas HaShas. It's going to give us a whole new understanding of answers in Rishonim. V'yesh loyma, says Tosfos, you're right, the vade lo yatzorech. Right? Really, the machloikas of Chiyaba Avin and Rav Asi is not needed to passel an esrog gevura. You don't need that. We already have the universal psul of Michtas Shiur, that the Shiur basically has been reduced. The Vade lo yatzor, elam nechlechu bahadach ta'ami. But they're arguing on these reasons, le'inyan ola, respect ola, why are they arguing on this? The argument has no tachlis, no purpose in passeling an esrog of ola. You don't need that. So what are they arguing about? Says Tosfos, why are they arguing about this? Bishum the nafkamina le'inyan ma'isa sheni. They really want to get to ma'isa sheni. Let's ponder this a little bit. This is an incredible thing. Incredible thing. The Gemara, after stating the din, the pisk of the Mishnah, that an esrog of orah is pasul, raises the question, my timer, what's the reason? In other words, right, what's the reason for this din? And presents a dispute between two amaroyim, each giving a different version for the psul, says the Tosfos, the Gemara didn't really need this. The Gemara created this dispute regarding the din of the Mishnah just as a vehicle at arriving at the dispute, which has absolutely nothing to do with Orla. The dispute is only, let's use a Yeshivish language, nogeya, relevant to Maaseh Sheni. inherent in the Tosfos' language is that the redactor of the Gemara created ex nihilo a dispute on an eslag of Ola on the Mishnah in order to speak about what is the true context of the dispute, namely Maisa Shaini. That's what Tosfos is saying. Now, dear listeners, why would anyone try to do something like that? What's the purpose? And it's clear from the Gemara that that's what the Gemara is doing. The Gemara begins with Esrog Shel Ola, but then the Gemara decides almost immediately that everybody agrees you need a Heter Achila because of Tumat Temeya. So because of that, the Gemara reinterprets the dispute between Rabbi Ba'avid and Rav Asi to be consequential in the case of Maisa Shaini. Why? Why would the Gemara feel it necessary to create a dispute on the Mishnah when in fact the Gemara itself, number one, dispute is only relevant to Maisa Shaini. Number two, the Gemara itself is going to develop the dispute and bring in Maisa Shaini as being the principal issue of dispute. Why would the Gemara try to do something like this? That's my question. But that is clearly the implication of Tosfos' statements. In other words, the pasul, an essence of all of, I just have to say, Mikdashir, like I said by Lulav, like I said by Shaifa, like I say Urat Shas, right? The purpose of this machloikis, which was literally created, constructed around the Mishnah, was really just to lead me to the real machloikis, which is over Maisa Shaini. Why did the Gemara do that? My question is, why would do something like that? Just bring a machloikis to Maisa Shaini. Just say, Esther so Maisa Shaini. Machloikis, Charama, right? Machloikis of Rav Chiya Bar Avin and Rav Asi. Esther so Maisa Shaini. Why bring it from the Mishnah? That's my question. First of all, I mean, let's back up a little bit. We see that the redactor of the Gemara, the Oirach of the Gemara, is basically, you know, creating a machloikas from A and somehow being malbishit on B. And then, consequently, this is what Tosfos was saying. That's exactly what Tosfos was saying. But then, I'm adding, then we're going from B to A. Why go from B to A? The Gemara itself does not hold up the Machloikis for much longer, for very long on, in the case of Ola. Gemara quickly goes to Maisa Shaini. The rest of the Sugya, the Shas, if you actually bother going through the end of the Sugya, which we miss and we'll go through, if not this time, next time, ends up with Maisa Shaini. Chala Isa Maisa Shaini. Esrog of Maisa Shaini, Matzah of Maisa Shaini. The Sugya devotes up to Maisa Shaini. The question is why? Okay. What I want to do is I want to actually continue a little bit. The Gemara raises the question, when the Gemara says Chad Amar and Chad Amar, one says this, one says that. So I'm sure in your eighth to Talmud study, I can imagine, when the probably list under Chad Amar, Chad Amar. So what does the eighth to Talmud study probably say? Probably says, look, there was a machloikis dispute. There's two opinions. We don't know who said what. There's two opinions. The Gemara had a suffix, a doubt. Two people were arguing. We have a doubt. We know that there were two opinions. We don't know who said what, which took which a position, but there was a doubt. There was a suffix. However, the problem is that the Gemara here produces an explicit statement of one of these Amoraim, namely Rav Asi, an explicit statement that Rav Asi holds doesn't have a good mama.
The Gemara says, "This time the Rav Asi." Let us conclude: the Rav Asi is the one, the Omar, who says it doesn't have a din mamai. Let's conclude the Rav Asi, the one who said this. And what's the Gemara's conclusion? How does the Gemara conclude like this? Very simply: Omar Rav Asi, Esek Abayis Hasheni, the Rav Meir in Am Yitzchak Chavos Abiyanta, the Rav Chama Am Yitzchak Chavos Abiyanta. In other words, Rav Asi says the din. And Esek Abayis Hasheni, according to Rav Meir, you're not Yitzchak. Why not? Because it's called Mamon Gavoa. You need a din mamon. And a chachamim, you are Yitzchak. Because according to chachamim, it's called Mamon Hedget. What was the suffix of the Gemara? You might have doubt? Yes, someone will say the Gemara. The Gemara didn't know Rav Asi said it. That's ridiculous. By the way, you should know something. When there's a redactor, you can't make arguments he didn't know that, because redactor can do whatever he wants. In other words, if the Gemara is just sort of like this, you know, like this, you know, this river that flows along, you know, at random, drowning in motion, anyone can pop up in every generation and add what they want, then right, you could say someone didn't know what the other one said. But when the Gemara has a redactor, right? It's unless the redactor is, I don't want to say what he is, right? In other words, you can't say that someone forgot or the redactor didn't know what was, I mean, the redactor has all the information in front of him. You can't say there was a period of forgetfulness. You can't say that the redactor had all the information in front of him. So the redactor says, concludes, and Rav Asi tells me the din. Rav Asi tells me the din. Rav Asi tells me that an Esra Gabayis Hasheini will be a machloikas between Rav Meir and Chachamim, meaning that it's Rav Asi who requires what? A din mamai. And that's it. The Gemara never doubts it after that. So what was your suffix? What was your doubt? Now we have two questions. You created a machloikas on a Mishnah, which was created. Okay, you reached your goal, which was Bayis Hasheini. But what was your doubt? Now, before we go further, I claim that this, among other many examples in Shas, is proof that when the Gemara says Chad Amar, Chad Amar, it doesn't necessarily mean we have a suffix. It doesn't necessarily mean we have a suffix. Chad Amar could mean, I hate to disagree with the Eisa Talmud study, Chad Amar could mean that the Gemara was faced with two possible positions, and the Gemara is trying to locate an Amayla who might have said that position. So the Gemara states this, and the Gemara has two candidates, and the Gemara says Chad Amar. In other words, the Gemara is not going to necessarily bring a proof from the Gemara explicitly that statement. The Gemara might bring from something else that the Gemara said that implies it took this position. In other words, Chad Amar doesn't mean there was a historical doubt. Chad Amar simply means, in this case certainly means, and what? Is that we're going to discuss this issue, and somehow we have proofs from other places that Rav Asi said like this, and Rav Chaim Abin said like this. But there's no doubt, there's no suffix. This is an important point. Because some people want to say the redactors lived so for much longer after the Gemara, Vaharaya, that even later Marayim, like Ravina, whatever it is, right? The Gemara says, Chadamah, Chadamah. How can there be a suffix on a machloikis that was at the time of Ravashi? But the answer is obvious. Chadamah, Chadamah doesn't mean a suffix. It means Gemara is discussing an issue. There are two possible positions on the issue. And the Gemara is trying to bring proves that this Amara might have said like this, and that Amara would have said, in other words, that the person that this position was this Amara, and the person that the other position was another Amara, and that's what the Gemara says, Chad Amar, Chad Amar, because Gemara didn't have a clear Masayra if they, in fact, ever took a position like that. That's what Chad Amar, Chad Amar means. Yeah.
You're not choosing two people randomly,
presumably. No, we're going to say. Rav Asi.
Right,
Let me give you coming highlights. Rav Asi says din mamon, because we have straight. Rav Asi says It's a machlokes of Meir Chachamim, of Esrus Abayis Hasheni. What about Rechia Ba'Avin? I'm not going to discuss it this evening, but I think I have an interesting chat on this. There's a problem in the Rambam. There's a problem in the Rambam. And the Mari Kukas, gives a whole mahalach in the Rambam. And he says that the makor, the source of the Rambam, is a Tosefta. And he changes the Gilsa from Rav Chiya Ba'Avin to Rav Chiya. It turns out, and now the Rambam passes like this Tosefta. So, could it be that the Gemara picked on Rav Chiya, not Rav Chiya Ba'Avin, but the Gilsa should be Rav Chiya, because the Gemara had a Tosefta that applied this opinion? Who's the Mechaber of the Tosefta? Rav Chiya.
Who knows the Tosefta?
Yes, it's more foolish. Shaul Lieber would not have liked this pshat, but we'll argue the Tosefta Pshuta next week. That's for sure. Anyway. Okay, now, what's the Gemara coming along?
We're not picking two random candidates.
No. We're picking two of Malayim, right?
So the Gemara, I mean, the redactor knew what his intent was. Why didn't you just spell it out at the beginning?
We'll get to it. That's what I'm going to get to right now. I'm going to speak about this right now. Why are we going? Why beat around the bush? That's a kashrut taisus too.
That was
our original kashrut. Okay, right. We'll get to it. What else? Okay, so now I want to claim the following thing. It seems to me what happened was like this. The fact is, let me back up a little bit too. The maskana, the conclusion of the Gemara, is the Rambam paskins like a mayor. The Maisa Shani is Mamma Gavoh. That's why the Rambam paskins. The problem is that he also paskins that Isa of Maisa Shani is Chayv and Chala. We'll see, that's like the entire sogya. Why should we Chayv and Chala if it's Mamma Gavoh? Ulfoshim asked the question of the Rambam. The Mari Kokos comes along with an incredible tour de force and gives beautiful shot the Rambam. But in other words, it seems really clear from the Mufoshim that the pashtas of the Sukya, right, is the halacha is like a vasi. Namely, that what? That Esra requires a din mamon. And that therefore, Maisa Shaini, because of that, Maisa Shaini, an Esra Maisa Shaini would be possible, just like an Isa Maisa Shaini, right? Would, according to Rabbi Meir, would be Potter in Chala, because it doesn't belong to the Jew, it belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this din, now, the Rambam Paskins, despite the fact that the Rambam Paskins, I'm actually getting ahead of myself, but whatever it is, the Rambam's Psak is not a Kavasi. It's not like a Vasi. The Rambam's Psak is interesting. The Rambam's Psak is like a Bchia. Namely, according to my recall, the Rambam's Psak is, even though the Rambam holds that what? That Pasaka Meir, the Maisa Shani is Baba Gavoa, the Rambam nonetheless Paskins, and an Isa Maisa Shani is Chayven Chala. So unfortunately, how can you say it like that? If we Pasaka Meir, that Maisa Shani is Baba Gavoa, what? I mean, it should be, according to the Sugya, it should be what? We potter in chala, and Esrega Maisa Shani should be possible. Now, what's interesting is the Gemara never brought this Tosefta. The Gemara never brought this Tosefta. At the end, the Gemara brings a brisa that seems to say that says Isa Shem Maisa Shani Petur Min Achala Devi Rameya. Then the Gemara argues with Tosefta is relevant. It seems to me that the Gemara was coming to argue on the Tosefta. The Gemara never made the Tosefta. The Bari Korkis produced the Tosefta, and they're on the Tosefta, but the Gemara never brings the Tosefta. I'm claim the Gemara L'chayla was coming to argue with the Tosefta. Therefore, what was the Gemara interested in? The Gemara was interested in, see, Rav Asi is a what? Rav Asi is an Amayra. Rav Chi is also an Amayra. Oh, even Rav Chi is an Amayra, L'chayla is an Amayra. But what? But he had the Tosefta. In other words, the Tosefta tells me, not like Rav Asi. It seems to me what the Gemara was doing, because all the Mephoshim are like, I'm assuming, yeah, sure. If Baisa Shani is Bam Gavol, like Abaya, whom we pass good like, then for sure what? The answer should be possible. It's the Mama, which means the Rishonim understood that the Halacha is like of Asi, that Esrog requires what? Esrog requires a Dimamai. So what? But the Baisa of Asi is an Amaya. It's a Tesefta. The Tesefta doesn't work like that. So it seems to me what the Gemara was trying to do, the Gemara was trying to find a Tanayic basis for Rav Asi's opinion. So because of this, the Gemara begins the Machlokes of Rav Asi and Rav Chiya Ba'avin on a Mishnah. The Gemara, so therefore, Rav Asi and Rav Chiya Ba'avin are not just arguing or something. They're discussing the reason for a Mishnah. And then the Gemara evolves the Machlokes to the Machlokes on Maisa Shani. But once again, already, it's clear from this evolution of the Machlokes that Rav Asi's din is located in a Tanayic source, in a Mishnah. And then at the very end of the Gemara brings a Braisa. A Braisa, which seems to support Rav Asi's position, but it might be that this Braisa was not considered to be as great an authority as what? As the Mishnah, or maybe the Tosefta. Not to mention the fact that the Gemara at the end makes a chiluk, maybe what we say about challah is not the same thing, cannot be applied to the case of Esrog. In other words, what I claim the redactor of the Gemara was doing, didn't fool the Rambam, what I claim the redactor of the Gemara was doing, was that the redacted Gemara was trying to provide Tanaic evidence for the position of Rav Asi that an Esrog and Challah of Maisa Sheni will go in accordance with Rabbi Meir or Chacham. That's what that was trying to do. In other words, it's clear from the Mephoshim that the Psak of the Bavli is like Rav Asi. The Rambam, who argues on this, is arguing according to Mary Caucus from what? On the basis of a Tosefta. So now, what was the redactor doing? The redactor was created an entire sugya. There's nothing wrong with that. Created an entire sugya to give evidence of the fact that in fact, an Esrog requires a Din Mamayn, and this Din Mamayn would have a consequence in the case of an Esrog of Maisa Shani, and now it got to be an Esrog. The Din Mamayn applies not only to Esrog, it applies to Matzah, and it applies to Challah. And all of these halachas are based in Tanaitic sources. And this was all coming, in my opinion, to argue on this Tosefta. That's what the redactor was doing. The fact is, the Rambam didn't pass like the Sugya of the Gemara. The Rambam is Shitasai. The Rambam says, the Lacha, the Rambam is Mufosim, Lasha the Rambam, not Dhamma, that the Lacha doesn't always only consider the Maskana of the Bavli. And in fact, it's the Mali Caucus, I think, I'm pretty sure, many people say, the Mari Kukas says in this halacha that the Rambam many times ignores the Shachar Batai of the Gemara. The Mari Kukas understood that Rambam was part of the Septa, and what he felt to be was the proper Pshat in the Mishnah. Pili ploy. Okay, so what do we get from this? We get from this an incredible thing. The redactor of the Gemara is coming to create the legal reasoning legal psak. That's what the redactor is doing. Just like we saw that in Tesla with Beis and Ksuvis, why did the Sugyas HaGemara, as the Ramban called it, the redactor there, bring Rav Acha Bar Yankov after the Stam Gemara, which Tosfos attributed to Rav Ashi? Because the redactor of the Gemara held that the proper halach was like Rav Acha Bar Yankov, not like Rav Ashi. So he brought Rav Ashi's interpretation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah speaking about Taspeira, Shalalasa, etc., etc. And then Rav Acha comes to argue Rav Ashi. The redactor Gemara was telling you whom he felt the halach was like. So the redaction of the Gemara is basically the legal and dialectic, a give and take of the Gemara, which propounds reason for passing the halach in a certain way in accordance with these, the redactor of that Gemara. That's the pshat here in Sukkah. Incredible pshat. No? Now, the Gemara is actually more complicated than I'm making it. I'm giving you, you know, these are Reish Milen. That Gemara is actually more complicated than I'm making it. But the fact remains. Let's look at the Tosfos. I'm going to read the Tosfos again. The Tosfos began this. I didn't begin this. The Tosfos began this. The Tosfos began saying clearly, the Vadali Yatzolech. The Gemara had no reason for bringing these two opinions on the Mishnah, because the Mishnah can be explained simply by a universally accepted position, Miktas Kos Hashua, that the Esrog, therefore, since has to be burned, its Shua is reduced. El Netzach Ba'adak Taim Ile Inyan Orla, why are they arguing in these reasons with respect to Orla? Mishum Mikot Anaf Kamei Ile Inyan Ma'is Shem, because we get to Ma'is Shem. The Mishnah wanted to go. The Gemara wanted to go from what? From Orla to Ma'is Shining. I say, let's add even more so. The Gemara wanted to make a statement about Ma'is Shining. But the Gemara wanted to base itself in the Mishnah. The Gemara wanted to base itself in the Mishnah. In other words, Orla and Ma'is Shining. Asking about Ma'is Shining, what's it did? The Tosefta only speaks about what? Chala. Where can I possibly get a din mamon? Respect to Eslai, I begin with Orla. There's an opinion that doesn't have a din mamon, and from that I evolve the din of what? Of Esrog Ma'is Shining. The Gemara is clearly siding with Ravasi's Shita, that's Toilam Achleikas of Rabbi Chachamim. And the Gemara brings a bracer to support it later on. Okay? So, the fact is, the purpose of the redaction of the Gemara was to create the legal reasoning in the form of a shakla vatalia, a give and take, which would create the legalistic underpinnings for what the sugya of the Gemara is to be the halacha. Now, many times, the Gemara doesn't come out with a clear. I mean, it's called lahayras as a shul guy, but the Gemara will give reasons. Should you decide like this, the Gemara gives the underlying reasons. The Gemara doesn't have to conclude like this, because we'll see the conclusion of the Gemara is maybe not like this. But the Gemara is giving underlying reasons why I should think maybe Lach is like this. After that, the Rishon decided what Lach is like. Yeah.
So if the Psak is not a consequence of the Shakli Vatari, but vice versa, the Shakli Vatari is a consequence of what we want the Psak to
do. Echonami, right.
So how did they arrive at the Psak? Is there a hidden Shakli Vatari, or is
it Psak? How does any Poizik arrive at the Psak?
Because I'm so good.
That's Taylor. Leave behind Billy. Whatever it is, we can discuss that. No! He might have had reasons too, but there's no question about it that, you know, the Poizik arrives at the Psak at the end, you know. On every Pesach you can always argue. But the Poizik arrived, that's his Das Tayas, he understands the Sugyas. That's he understands everything came before him. That's fine. So now, let's go back to the question again. Why did the Gemara create this? For a simple reason. This was, in fact, the illegal underpinnings. Now, the fact is, that the way we're presenting this is a little bit, you know, strange, because, I mean, this is, you know, what happened before this? This is the first time in Judaism, you know, people use dialectics. The answer is no, obviously not. First of all, Gemara is not something that was invented by Rav Ashi, or after Rav Ashi. In fact,
The Gemara says,
see, there is
a Gemara of Heman Alf and Mocha, Yisakosh Baruch Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu Gemara, but of course that might be called an Agadita. And the Rambam certainly doesn't interpret that Gemara as such in his Hakdama to the Mishnah Torah. However, there's a Gemara in Krisus, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and the Gemara in Krisus speaks about what type of hayra is asr for a kohen who, for a person who drinks wine. And the Gemara brings a pasuk, Hadul ben Akkadish ben Achoel, right? Gemara says, ben Atar elu tameis v'taharais lahayrais zu hayra is called a chukir elu medrashais. Hashem zu halacha. B'yad Moshe zeh Talmud. The word the Gemara, Yilma Bey says, is that even a legal decision arrived through Talmud constitutes something for which a person cannot drink, or vis of Yayin. Now, this is a Tanah Rabbanon. This is a Machlus Tanayim here. Tanayim source. So, the concept of Gemara always existed. The Tanayim paskin according to Gemara, Shachar Batalya. The Maraya Paschal Kol Shachar Batalya. But somehow, the Gemara, the Shas that we have in front of us, opened up the window of the Shachar Batalya of a certain generation. The Sugyas HaTalmud, from Rav Ashi till Rav Yosef. And this is Bashman Rashi, Pei Vavu Ben Aleph, Mav Metzia. Rav Ashi began to, was Saif Hayrah, says Rashi, and then Avash started asking kashas. His friends started asking kashas, they gave Teilutzim, this and that. It's mashma that, now doesn't mean the people that ask kashas for Avash, Avash didn't invent the kasha. But somehow, the role, the tachlis of the generation of Avashi, and from Avashi until Rav Yosi, who's Mestayim Talmud in his time, was basically to incorporate as part of the canon the dialectical halachic process. That was the purpose of those generations, those 50, 60 years. We'll speak a lot about this later on. Anyway, so now, I want to go back again, because I'm going to go into the Gilsois of the Gemara, which is important, we don't have time now. But the basic thing is, everything I'm saying is coming off the Tosfos. Everything I'm saying, this is, I didn't make anything up. I'm just elaborating upon the basic statement made by Tosfos that this machlok is really has nothing to do with the Mishnah, but the Gemara introduced it on the Mishnah in order to get the Maaseh Sheni. Of course, the Tosfos are going l'shitasam, Binyamin Milch. They're going l'shitasam that the Gemara will engineer a Shachar Batalya in order to arrive at a certain halachic decision and conclusion, and the Gemara will be quite ahistorical in doing so. That's what the Gemara does. That's the Derech HaGemara. Now, what I want to say, mention one more thing too, which I think is important. The Tekufa that we're speaking about, the era we're speaking about, is a very, very, not a long era. Not a time to Gemara. The Gemara didn't forget what Rav Asi said. The Gemara didn't forget what Rav Chiya Bar Avin said. Where was engineering the statements of these Amoraim, or statements they made in others, in other contexts, in order to arrive at a halacha, what is the din in the case of an esrog, a matzah, and challah regarding Maaseh Sheni? So, there's no lack of Messiah here. There's no black hole here. But how does this fit into our concept of Messiah? Because our concept of Messiah is mistaken. We think Messiah is handing one thing down from generation to another generation. I'm not sure that's a Messiah. That way, not to go into all the differences of Messiah, that's nearly not what... That we have to revise ideas of Messiah. The Rambam says in Hilchas Mam and Perek Beis that a second Sanhedrin, even though it's not great in Chokhmah Bina, you can overturn the drushes of an earlier Sanhedrin. That's Messiah? No. Messiah, I want to introduce this concept, very important. Messiah means there's a hermeneutical continuity. That's what Messiah is. In other words, generation
is creating an interpretation of a text. Generation number two is interpreting their interpretation. There's a content, hermeneutical means interpretative history, which does not have any gaps. Doesn't have any gaps. There are no black holes. No one has misunderstandings of when a statement was made and in what context it was made. The Amorayim, my dear leaders, were not, my dear listeners, were not scholars. They were halachists. Just like any tshuva of any great poisek involves a certain amount of a convex combination of text and interpretation, the generations of Rabbi Seinu, Chachamim Zichron Levracha, were no different. In other words, the Gemara is taking the text, or the Messiah, this is probably the Mi'al Peh, according to Shittos of Eder Shainin, and interpreting as the way to arrive at the halachic conclusions, which they wanted. A next generation might have done different. The point of the Stimas HaShas, that for a reason which we'll discuss in Mi'at Hashem, at the very, very end of the Shi'urim, the process was frozen at this point. Not the process was frozen, but we were made privy to the dynamics and the complex procedure, which was frozen at this point. After this, all halacha which decided in future generations has to adjust itself to the parameters of the dialectics as they're incorporated within the text of the Gemara. So, this is the true concept of the Seira. The Seira is a hermeneutical process. That's what makes the Torah a living document, Teras Chayim. Now, like I said before, we're not finished yet. We're only beginning, because really, there's a lot of questions that I, of course, haven't told you. I don't have the Gemara in front of you. And I can't hear black out the questions like I did with Ben Mills, because everybody has the same shas. But next time, Mi'at Hashem, I'm going to go deeper into the Gemara, and we'll explain exactly, perhaps, how the Rambam, to reconstruct how the Rambam understood the sugya. And the reason for the Rambam's psak, which, I mean, according to the Nefosh HaRambam, the Mariah Caucus, is to be connected to the sugya Sagamara. When we construct it, it's very, very important. The Gemara actually has an interesting back and give and take in Laman Hamad Beis, which is not easily understood. We're going to actually explore that and see what the significance is. In other words, we're not finished yet, but nonetheless, this is an answer to the question, what were the redactors doing? And this is really, in my opinion, this is the pshat of the Tosfos. Okay? Until then, we will bid adieu. Any questions, please email them to admin@hashkafacircle.com. Until then, be gesund.